ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Thursday, April 6th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
A lot of things to talk about today. A follow-up on yesterday's news and all kinds of things going on. And something I've been reading a lot about, Al, lately is the shadow banking. And I saw an article, and I have searched everywhere, and I can't find it. But it was from one of the Federal Reserve's presidents. And he was talking about one of the biggest dangers to our economy is the shadow banking. And, you know, when we think of shadow banking, we think of China. But no, folks, it's global. Everyone shadow banks. I mean, even down to Sotheby's, you know, art dealers. I mean, they've become shadow banks. They make millions of dollars of loans to clients, you know, to buy their masterpieces. This is what happened during the financial crisis. And they were part of the ones that were, you know, bailed out, you know, the money market funds and Lehman Brothers and such. So, again, it was interesting. I can't find it. So we'll be talking more about it as I'm going to research and see if we can't get some more numbers on that area of the economy. So when you hear about, oh, we're going to, you know, improve regulations, we're going to take away the, you know, the Dodd-Frank and, you know, so forth to help the banks and so forth. Don't let that kid you, folks. The banks are already out there doing their shadow banking, and it's not regulated. There's no regulations, you know, so.
Do you know why that is?
Money laundering.
Well, it's not just that, but no. A lot of this, the cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, all the rest of this, is a function of having an intangible monetary system. Everything's based on debt. Everything's based on paper or digits. Well, I can produce paper. I can produce little paper documents. I can't produce gold coins, though. I can produce digital currency. I can't produce gold coins. When they went off gold coins and silver as the backbone of our current, of our monetary system, they opened the door for an enormous variety of alternatives. And shadow banking is just one, and Bitcoin is another, and cryptocurrencies and the rest of that. And they're not going to regain control until they put a tangible monetary system in.
I wouldn't lump Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies together with shadow banking. They do have perhaps some sort of a
I'm saying the common denominator goes back to who's got the gold coins.
It's totally different, but I agree with you. It's not going to change. You know, they're going to have to stop, you know. How do they stop? And you're right. The only way they can stop it is through regulating through gold and silver. So, with that, gold today, we had, it is a very exciting, but it's part of the danger. It's a lurking danger that no one really talks about. You know, you talk about China and they're, no, folks, it's right here at home. It's global. And can you only imagine what they have done? I think back in 2007, there was like $38 trillion. In loan. Can you only imagine what it is today?
In shadow banking.
Can you only imagine what it is today? But gold today didn't get any of that money from the shadow banking industry. It struggled today, 340, still holding on to the report for tomorrow. And again, we might see some pressure on gold again tomorrow, maybe silver, depending on what the government releases on the non-farm payrolls. And again, the meeting with the Chinese president and Mr. Trump down in Florida today and tomorrow. But I think after that, if, you know, it just depends on what comes on. But I think that the pressure again is going to be temporary. Mm-hmm. So we get through Monday, and I think then we're going to see another reversal, and we're going to be back on to what's important in gold and silver. With that said, gold down $3.40 at $1,253. Silver was down 6 cents. At $18.31. Platinum was down 6 at $958. Palladium was down 4 at $807. The USDX today was stronger, 0.11 at 100.68. Crude oil today was up 0.50 at 51.65. And the paper markets today. I didn't even follow them today. They were You know, they were up and down. Dow was up 14 points, 20,663. The NASDAQ up 14 at 58.78. And the S&P was up 4 at 23.57. 10-year yield down 0.01 at 2.34%. I don't know what the... let's see, anything else interesting? You know, we often talk about, Al, about people don't have a pot to, you know...
to store their gold coins in?
A pot to wee-wee. Or a pot to, you know, they can't come up with $1,000 or $2,000.
Yeah, that's true.
And you hear, you continue to hear all these reports, and there was another survey released by HomeServe USA, and there was another one by MetLife, found that 49% of employees are concerned, anxious, or fearful about the current financial well-being. But the headline of this is about how the U.S. working families are living paycheck to paycheck. Now, this isn't new. You know, people have been living paycheck to paycheck for how long?
Probably through most of history.
Yeah, you know, at least until you get a little bit older in your 50s and you say, oh, gee, you know, I'm not going to be able to work in too much longer, so I better buckle down and do some savings. But again, it hasn't changed. But, you know, we see all this wealth. You see the stock market's hitting all these peaks. We're constantly told that things can be better, but things aren't bad. And you would still think that people would be able to position themselves a little bit better than paycheck to paycheck. But human nature, is it going to change for this year, next year, and so forth? Americans are crippled under the same amount of debt as they had during the recession. The New York Federal Reserve on Monday predicted that total household debt will reach its previous peak of $12.68 trillion in 2017. The last time it reached that level was in the third quarter of 2008, during the depths of the Great Recession. It's already close. Total household debt in fourth quarter of 2016 was $12.58 trillion. And fewer borrowers have housing-related debt in 2017 and instead have taken on auto and student loans. And you know what, Al, you think about the difference between housing. I mean, housing is something that you work for, and you really want to work hard to keep it. Even if you're having financial problems, I mean, you need a roof over your head. But when you look to auto loans and student loans, those are loans that, yeah, I don't need to pay them. It's not a type of loan where, yes, you need a car and you get around, but hey, if you have a new car and you lose it, it gets repossessed, you can go buy a used car, you know, for many thousands and thousands of dollars less. Student loans, you know, it's something else. I mean, it's very hard to get rid of student loans, but again, that's something that we've seen those defaults increase also along with the auto. So these are loans. This is debt. That's taken us back to the 2008 during the depths of the Great Recession. And I think they're much fragile loans, much more dangerous loans than what we had then. So just kind of put things into perspective.
No, I understand. Things are perhaps more fragile. And, you know, it is amazing. Those who don't learn from history are destined to repeat it. And it seems that we are destined to repeat in not learning. People aren't going to pay attention. And, you know, it really is something of a mystery where people are so determined to go into debt, so determined to buy a bunch of stuff that they probably don't need. They buy it maybe to show off to their friends and their neighbors and the rest of it. Oh, look, I got this, that, or the other. You could have got by without it. And by purchasing these things right now, got to have it now, you are compromising your future. And I know that, you know, serious economists and whatever would disparage what I'm implying there. You gotta spend less and save more, because they want you to spend now to stimulate the economy now. But if you have to do it by borrowing, it guarantees that the day is coming when you won't be able to spend. You either live within your means now, or you live within your debt later on. One way or another, there's going to be a period where we're going to see the economy tank. Right? And we can either slow it down now and live normally and live within our means and even save some money, or we can borrow from the future and compromise that future. You know, the idea that we're going to borrow, we'll pay it off a year from now or 5 years from now or 10 years from now, that just guarantees one way or another we're going into another recession. It may be a while before we get there, but we're headed for a lower standard of living as long as we keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing against the future. So dangerous, irrational, stupid, and yet we seem determined to do it.
We're destined to repeat. Here's something else. And you know, we talk a lot about robots on the program, Al, and I, people say, oh, you don't want to go forward, you want to go back in time. It's, no, I don't. It's just reality. You know, you have to look at how good and how bad are robots being introduced into, you know, our society and into manufacturing and jobs and restaurants and so forth. But here, and the reason I'm bringing this article up, nearly 30% of Arizona's part-time workers want a full-time job but can't find one. Arizona has one of the highest rates of underemployed workers in the nation, a situation that can keep people in poverty, lacking benefits, facing other financial problems, and this is according to a new Federal Reserve report. In Arizona, 29% of part-time workers said they prefer full-time employment. Okay. Nationally, 21% of part-time workers were in that status involuntarily, according to that study. Only Nevada and California had higher rates of involuntary part-time workers at 33% and 30%. Now, the reason they have, what I believe, is, of course, these are states that are on borders. They have a high volume, whether they're illegal immigrants or legal immigrants, they have and that does have an impact on these states. I believe with you have robots, you're going to continue to see. Now, I'm comparing the robots to the illegal immigrants and the immigration, bringing them in and all the visas and so forth. So, again, this isn't going to improve.
If you have illegal aliens taking jobs, that's just a reality. There's only so they in theory come here for jobs.
But my point
they're taking
is
jobs,
going to
which
be
puts,
this,
makes people unemployed.
Right. But the point of it is going to be the same with the robots. It's not going to improve for people who want to work full time. What you're going to have is more full time workers now getting part time jobs in the future because they're going to be replaced or assisted by the robots. So, that was just sort of my.
Yeah, and it's just inevitable. We talked about this. We've talked about this in the past about the robots, but they are so much more efficient, so much more cost effective. We talked about where one of the studies we saw that the average robot replaces six people, which means a robot can function for 1/6 the price of what it costs. You know, in jobs, in industrial jobs or wherever, if you can install a robot, on average, you replace six people. The economics of that is simply you can't avoid it. If you're a businessman, you have to do it. If your competitors install robots, they can sell a product, reduce their labor costs by what, 5/6, whatever that translates out to be, 70-80%. It gives them an incredible advantage, a competitive advantage. They can reduce their prices and still make a profit, and you have to proceed without robots, and you're just going to lose business because you can't match them for price. This is an idea whose time has come, all right, and it will be irresistible. And you can't even sit back and say, well, we'll pass a law and we won't have any robots in the United States. Well, that's a great idea, but you're going to have to pass a law that you don't take any products from China because they're installing robots and they've got more people. The idea that China would install robots is just extraordinary because they've got so many people, they have to keep them employed, and yet they expect to be installing robots, which will create significant unemployment in China. But they're doing it because I think they understand that they can't be competitive without robots. I don't know. What are we going to do about it? You know, well, one way or another, the robots have to be taxed in order to support the people who don't have jobs anymore. That's part of the problem we have here. And are we going to move into a society that either most of us don't have jobs and we just live on welfare, government subsidies, whatever? Is that where we're going to live? Can we do that and kind of hold this whole thing together? Or do we depend on jobs psychologically to hold the country together? What happens if we're all unemployed? Do we come into some sort of a worker's paradise where we don't have to work anymore? Just sit around and do what? Play games on the internet? Go out there and get into gunfights? Drink? Smoke? Do drugs? What are we going to do without jobs? I don't know. Maybe we can. Maybe it will be a worker's paradise, but it's going to be different than it is today. It's going to be different from anything we've seen in the past. And people who think this is like the Industrial Revolution took over a century. We're not going to have a century to deal with these robots. They're going to be here in the next 5 years in significant numbers. They're already arriving. They're going to be increasingly cost effective. People are getting out of schools where they don't get a decent education. How are you going to compete for a job with the kind of education you get in a public school system today? What can you do that the robots can't do? And there are some things that you can do the robots can't do. I get that. But there are going to be a lot of jobs that are going to be, I mean, even white collar jobs. People are going to be replaced by robots. What will we do? Need to start thinking about it and come to some sort of an agreement and consensus and do the best we can, but this is going to change the structure of the world.
Maybe we can go fly with Jeff Bezos. He's selling $1 billion of Amazon stock a year to fund Rocket Venture. He announced this on Wednesday. He's selling about $1 billion worth of internet retailer stock to fund his Blue Origin Rocket Company, which aims to launch paying passengers on 11-minute space rides starting next year. Blue Origin had hoped to begin test flights with company pilots and engineers in 2017, but that probably won't happen until next year, Basil told reporters at the annual U.S. Space Symposium in Colorado Springs. His business model right now for Blue Origin is he sells about $1 billion of Amazon stock a year, and he uses it to invest in Blue Origin. So,
well, I don't know what to say about that. The man's either a genius or he's living proof that a fool and his money are soon parted. Amazon still doesn't make a profit, so far as I know.
How does that work?
It's not. I understand that. How can you run a business that doesn't make a profit? This is strange. And people say, wow, the internet, you can do these. These are things we can do now. I don't know that we can. Right? Maybe he's dumping Amazon and he's investing it in rocket ships. Is that smart? I guess we'll find out. Let's take a break, couple commercials, be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with co-host Melody Cederstrom, and there's something from, you know, we were just talking about the robots. The only thing that isn't coming after us for sure are the zombies. The zombies are fictional, so far as I know, and even that may turn out to be true before we're done. But we have the robots, they're coming in. We got the illegal aliens, they have been coming in. They may be slowing down now that they are, it's abundantly clear that the president doesn't want them. But illegal aliens coming from the south and robots coming from technology. And here's something coming from, in a sense, outer space. There's an article from Prophecy News Watch, and it says the North Korean EMP threat. One warhead could destroy our nation. Now, this is an interesting, because we've heard North Korea claims that they're putting together, they've already tested several nuclear weapons. Some people think they have something like 8 nuclear weapons so far. That doesn't sound like much, but maybe you don't need much. Again, the North Korean EMP threat, it means electromagnetic pulse, EMP, electromagnetic pulse. And it's the idea that you can detonate a nuclear weapon at high altitude over a nation, and maybe just one. And you can detonate, and it will generate an electronic pulse that will destroy your computers and your internet connections, and I don't know what all will happen. But an electronic pulse comes out of that, that nuclear weapon at high altitude, and that nuclear pulse can cover most of the country and wipe out your electronic communications, and it's not a small thing. Here's an article from Prophecy Newswatch, and it says James Woolsey, former director to the CIA, and Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, the executive director of the EMP Task Force on National and Homeland Security, wrote an article on North Korea's nuclear capacity to destroy the United States. Here are a couple of excerpts. The mainstream media and some officials who should know better continue to allege North Korea does not yet have capability to deliver on its repeated threats to strike the United States with nuclear weapons. Well, this is an interesting statement, because here we are blaming, this is CIA, former CIA director, blaming the mainstream media for failing to report properly on the dangers of the EMP. And it's interesting just to see that the CIA is saying, oh, there's the bad guy, it's the mainstream media, or at least one of the bad guys is the mainstream media. That kind of surprises me. The article continues. It says, false reassurance is given to the American people by the mainstream media that North Korea has not demonstrated that it can miniaturize a nuclear warhead small enough for missile delivery or build a reentry vehicle for an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of penetrating the atmosphere to blast a U.S. city. They haven't demonstrated. So apparently what they're saying is the mainstream media won't believe that North Korea can deliver an atomic weapon to strike this country until they actually deliver an atomic weapon to strike this country. And then they'll say, if they say anything, it's, never mind, you know, forget what we said in the past. How do they demonstrate this? To demonstrate it, absolutely, they have to do it, and we can't wait on that. Yet any nation that has built nuclear weapons and long-range missiles, as North Korea has done, can easily overcome the relatively much simpler technological challenge of warhead miniaturization and reentry vehicle design, which is more or less, we touched on this subject yesterday, and it's what I said, how hard can it be to put a nuclear weapon in a missile up there under the pointy end of the missile and launch it? I understand there's guidance things, and it's a complex technology, but once you get into it, I'm sure this is not you know, this is not space technology in the sense that we're going to another galaxy or something. This is relatively common technology in this day and age. Next, North Korea should be regarded as capable of delivering by satellite a small nuclear warhead specially designed to make a high-altitude electromagnetic pulse, EMP, electromagnetic pulse attack against the United States. So it isn't critical that North Korea have a missile that can reach, cut across the entire ocean and detonate over the middle of the United States. They don't need that ICBM. What they need, absolutely, is to be able to put a satellite in orbit that can skip and cross over the United States, and then theory can be carries a nuclear weapon, and in theory can be detonated by North Korea if and when they want to do that. And they go down, they say, according to the Congressional EMP Commission, a single warhead delivered by North Korean satellite could black out the national electric grid and other life-sustaining critical infrastructure for over a year, killing 9 of 10 Americans by starvation and societal collapse. One nuclear weapon. You know, we've gone through this business where we had this mutually assured destruction, MAD, the defense that if the Russians, during the Cold War, if the Russians launched a nuclear attack on us, we'd flood Russia with, you know, hundreds of nuclear weapons, nuclear bombs, and they might get us, but we'd get them too, so they couldn't dare to do it. And we stocked up an enormous, we created an enormous stockpile of nuclear weapons. Russia created an enormous stockpile of nuclear weapons. But we are living in a world where we are so dependent on our electrical grid and so dependent on our computers that just one, if you've got one nuclear weapon, you are a credible threat. I mean, big time. Detonate one if you can get one up into the atmosphere over whatever nation you're at war with. You don't need thousands or hundreds of nuclear weapons. You need one. And Korea has one. And beyond that, it says two North Korean satellites, the KMS-3 and KMS-4, presently orbit over the United States on trajectories consistent with surprise EMP attack. Now, this is not to say that there's a nuclear device in either of these satellites, but it is to say that North Korea has the capacity to launch satellites that circle the globe. And these satellites could be coming over the United States every, I don't know how often they circle the globe, but once a day, once every 6 hours, I don't know how fast they come. But in theory, they could. Here's that EMP. And again, according to the Congressional EMP Commission, a single warhead delivered by North Korean satellite could black out the national electric grid and other life-sustaining critical infrastructure for over a year, killing 9 out of 10 Americans by starvation and societal collapse. It was just another sign that illegal aliens coming in, got robots coming in, got maybe EMP satellites whizzing overhead. We live in interesting times. We live in dangerous times, and every bit of this is fragile. We have become so efficient that we have also become extremely vulnerable. That electric grid was not such an important thing 50 years ago, and computers didn't even exist. But we didn't depend on them the way we do right now. Something were to happen to that electronic technology where it didn't function, we would be in an extraordinarily difficult, I mean, this society would probably collapse. And they're just saying it could happen. What's the lesson here? I don't know. I don't know when I read this report whether I'm being informed. And they're saying, listen, there is a serious threat that has to be considered right now. And there's some crazy guy in North Korea. By implication, they're saying there's some crazy guy who might fire one missile up over or a satellite that's over the United States and destroys this country for a year. One missile, one satellite, one nuclear weapon could be enough. And are we supposed, is this a reasonable concern, or is this evidence of fear mongering, where they're trying to build the case? We need to get these guys in Korea before they get us.
Well, you know about the EMP. I mean, I read articles, good articles, both sides. You could argue both sides to the degree of damage. But the important thing is it will do damage, even if it's not to the degree where 9 out of 10, you know, people starve and you know, the system is down for a year and so forth. It's still a deadly situation. And something, they don't even have to come within the, you know, within our area. They just have to go up above. So yeah. I think it is, you know, certainly something in between because, you know, because that's usually where we are. You know, it isn't the most devastating impacts or the least. It's usually somewhere in the middle. And, but yeah, and, you know, I think.
Well, let's just suppose for the sake of argument, it killed 20%, not 90%.
Oh, that's why I said it's still
killed
devastating.
20%. Yeah, what happens then?
Yeah, it's still devastating. And I think there's a lot of hope, maybe, that China would be able to, we talked a little bit about this, Jester, be able to calm North Korea down a little bit and so forth. But really, their relationships over the years, the past years especially, it really has deteriorated. I mean, just earlier this year, in February, China restricted all coal imports from North Korea for, you know, a whole year. That's, you know, but, you know, it's saying something. But also what's interesting, China's economic assistance to North Korea accounts for about half of all of Chinese foreign aid. So North Korea gets half of China's foreign aid. And, of course, North Korea's, you know, China's North Korea's largest trade partner. And so I'm not so sure if China's going to have that much of an impact in calming North Korea down.
I don't think they can.
You know, I mean, hey, you know, aid coming from China, that's important. Your trade coming from China, that's important. You know, but, you know, there's a lot of things going on between the two countries, and I'm not so sure that China will have the bigger impact on it, but...
I saw a map of Korea and China and whatever, the Korean Peninsula and so on. I had assumed that North Korea and South Korea had also always been part of a single country. But in fact, according to the map, South Korea is a culturally different people than North Korea, and North Korea has at one point been part of China, and which kind of explains China's affinity for North Korea. It's not as if they're dealing with an entirely foreign country. It's like the United States talking about England or England talking about the United States. We have a certain kind of common history that binds us to each other. China has a certain common history that binds itself to North Korea in a way that is not necessarily true between North and South Korea. And I had always assumed that North and South Korea were, you know, two sides of the same coin, but maybe not. So it's interesting from a perspective, historical perspective. Maybe China has, you know, got to take care of little brother.
But you could also, here's another, China could also be egging North Korea on a little bit.
Oh, I understand.
To say, hey, you know, give me leverage. Give me leverage. So when I talk to the U.S., you know, I'll calm you down. And I'll use that as a bargaining chip for the South China Seas.
Oh, they could be using get North Korea, encourage him to fire that weapon. People say, oh, the United States is going to get into a war with China. Some people think that's likely to happen or possibly could happen. What if China said, no, we're not going to get a war with the United States, but maybe we can get that the idiot North Korea to launch an EMP on the United States, and they can have the war on our behalf. Not impossible. I don't know. It's kind of a crazy idea on one level, but it's certainly not an irrational idea. Everybody in this game has got to be just under incredible stress. President Trump, the Premier Kim Jong-un in North Korea. South Korea's got to be under stress. Japan's under stress. China's under stress. I mean, this house of cards, everybody looking at it, and particularly people in positions of power, they have to understand how fragile it really is. And they've got to be scared. that, oh my gosh, this thing's liable to blow up in our faces. Not all of them. Some of them are just crazy. They're too dumb to be frightened. Some of them are too maybe brave or courageous to be frightened. I don't even know if it's a positive thing or not. But the point is, there is a lot of instability and a lot of danger. And although we get it glossed over, people are happy days are here again. One nuclear weapon from North Korea, who is apparently run by a crazy guy, one nuclear weapon could be enough to, according to this report, and maybe that's just hyperbole, who knows how many. Like you said, it might be 10%, might be 20%, who knows? But just the same, who does know? Who knows that it's, instead of 9 out of 10, how about 99 out of 100? Who knows that's not true? It's another one of these things that predispose us, maybe correctly, maybe mistakenly, to say we got to shut North Korea down.
We got a couple of emails, Al, and one from Bob. He says he has a gut feeling that we have many types of secret advanced military technology, possibly including some kind of Star Wars laser rays and or anti-missile defenses setting off the shore of Korea that can defend Japan and our military bases there, as well as the Philippines. They might be able to defend. Are they going to be able to defend 100%?
I get that, but here's the point. He's betting that if North Korea launches a missile that's carrying a nuclear weapon, that we will be able to detect that launch and we will be able to fire another faster, smaller rocket from, who knows, a submarine off the coast of Korea. I don't know where it's coming from, but close by where it can strike the North Korean missile and knock it out of the sky. Well, that may be true. On the other hand, what happens if we miss? All right? What if we miss and the rocket keeps on going? Now what? Now we're going to have a very serious problem. And what it leads to is the idea that maybe we can't afford to give North Korea a free shot. Maybe we can knock it down. Maybe we can't. Maybe we have to stop them before they even take that first shot. And I guarantee there are people that are... I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying it is a... It's a natural and rational argument. And I guarantee there are people in positions of power that are saying, we can't wait. We can't take the chance. We got to stop them now before they ever get a chance to make something airborne.
There was another comment. There were lots of air bursts, nuclear tests in the 50s and early 60s, and there was no EMP damage.
I understand that. I understand that, but and there's something, there's technology here that I do not understand, that's for sure. We're going to take a break, a couple more commercials. Be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival. Won't you let it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Oh, you caught me off guard, Al. I was looking up. We were talking about my allergies, and we were talking about sesame seed oil capsules, and you caught me off guard, and I'm being honest. So what's next?
Well, we're not going to talk about sesame seed oil then, is that right? Well, let's talk about the Republicans' new Supreme Court filibuster to squeeze through Gorsuch from Yahoo News.
I don't think they're going to have a filibuster.
No, they're not.
No, they're
They've
not.
Changed the rules. Right? Republicans nuked a long-standing precedent requiring 60 votes to end filibusters of Supreme Court nominees in order to push through President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch. Most Democrats joined a filibuster of the nominee, arguing that he was outside of the legal mainstream. I don't know. Do we have a legal mainstream, Melody, or do we have something like a legal sanitary sewer? I'm not sure at times. The legal mainstream should be the Constitution. And I don't think any of these people who sit in the courts there believe that. That ought to be the legal mainstream. But in any case, most Democrats joined the filibuster of the nominee, arguing that he was outside of the legal mainstream and that Republicans owed them a consensus nominee after they blocked a hearing of former President Barack Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, last year. They're saying, look, you wouldn't let President Obama get this, put another communist on the Supreme Court bench, and therefore you owe us a consensus candidate. I don't know where they get that. I mean, what, good God. I mean, it's interesting, but what did the Democrats owe us for sending thugs out to interfere with Trump rallies during the election? Do they owe anybody for anything for that? And does either party owe the American people anything? The Democrats are saying, well, the Republican Party owes us something. I'm sure the Republican Party sits back, well, you Democrats owe us a... Hey, does anybody owe anything to the people of the United States of America? Maybe not. The first vote to end debate on Gorsuch failed 55-45 Thursday morning, with just four Democrats joining Republicans to end the filibuster. So they failed to end the filibuster on Thursday morning. But then Republicans changed the 60-vote precedent on a party-line vote, 52-48. The Senate then voted to end debate on Gorsuch with 55 votes. Three Democrats joined the Republicans. And the result is... now just 51 votes are required to end the filibuster. They've ended it, and Mr. Gorsuch is headed for the Supreme Court. So it's a little bit like John Williams at ShadowStats.com. He has calculated what the inflation rate and the unemployment rate and a number of different economic indicators would be if we calculated them the same way today as we did 15 or 20 years ago. And based on that, you said, if we use the same formulas today that we used 15 or 20 years ago, our unemployment rate would not be less than 5%. It'd be over 20%. All right? Well, here we have something like that in the Republicans, where they just said, look, if we can't win the vote on the rules we have right now, we'll just change the rules. How hard can it be, Melody? But here's where someone makes an intelligent comment. It's Senate Republican Bob Corker of Tennessee. He says the battle over changing the rules caused much hand-wringing in the Senate, which prides itself on being more deliberative and bipartisan than the rowdier House of Representatives. some Senate Republicans, such as Senator Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, argued that it was a step that could destroy the Senate and possibly lead the body to also change its rules and only require 51 votes to end debate on legislation as well. That would mean a majority party could quickly push through bills instead of requiring some buy-in from the other side. Republicans blame Democrats because they eliminated the filibuster for lower court judges in 2013. Colorado's jurist backed the Senator Schumer said in a post-nuclear world, and what they mean after the Republicans have reduced the number of votes needed to end a filibuster, they regard this as the nuclear option. In a post-nuclear world, if the Senate and the presidency are in the hands of the same party, there's no incentive to even speak to the Senate minority. That's a recipe for more conflict and bad blood between the parties, not less. And what he's saying, look, they've made it so easy to change this that if you're the majority party, you don't even have to talk to Democrats. And the Democrats will get their turn one of these days. They will be the majority party, and they won't even have to talk to the Republicans. There will be no need for compromise. There'll be no need to sit back and say, well, let's reason together. If you can control the majority in an election, you can tell the other side essentially to stick it. We don't have to listen to you. Go home. We don't need you. We'll do what we want to do. So, is this a good thing or a bad thing, Melody, that they have changed the rules to allow the Republicans to stop the filibusters and now virtually guarantee, I think Gorsuch is guaranteed to go to the Supreme Court now?
Of course, it's not a good thing. But you know what is amazing is that these senators, these Democrats, the only reason they were going to filibuster wasn't because of Gorsuch and his rulings in the past. It was just because the Republicans didn't allow Obama's pick of Garland to get in. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, if you're going to filibuster someone, you know, because there's reason, not because you guys are just making a snotty little
That's the problem. The only reason is animosity. There's the problem. This is a situation, this is a formula where they become more and more dysfunctional. We're not going to agree with people. We're just going to overpower them, beat them into submission.
And the Republicans should have just let them filibuster.
Well, I understand that. I don't know what to say other than this is not evidence that even when we talk about the instabilities and the threats that are apparent to the economy and the nation, we see evidence of this even in the Senate. They're not acting in a way that could be construed as civil, not acting in a way that could be construed as cordial. It's like Corker said, this is going to create more bad blood. There will be more polarization, perspective, that's not a good thing.
Could this have been by design?
I don't think so.
Let me finish, because now you have an administration that most likely will be appointing, what, another one? In the next
Trump has a chance to report. Trump is going to change the formula for the Fed.
They can pick anybody they want, and nobody can say anything.
Yeah. Well, they can't.
So
up
was
until
that by
the next
design?
Election.
Let's just get somebody like Gorsuch, who wasn't too bad, and
It's hard to say. There's reports that he tends to side with big corporations rather than ordinary Americans. I don't know if that's true or false.
Well,
I don't know if Gorsuch is good or bad. I'm not for him. I'm not against him.
I also heard he cited for after the 9/11 that he was for the surveillance of Americans and so forth. So, but who wasn't at that time? Why wasn't he?
The Americans weren't.
Every
the American
judge
people
and
weren't in favor
was.
Of it, but who cares what they wanted? How many senators do they have in the Senate? The Republicans have senators. The Democrats have senators. The American people, we don't have any senators. We don't have any representatives either. It's up to us to just grin and bear it and salute and execute when our fearless leaders decide what we have to do. But it's evidence to me of when people can't work together, and I get this. I mean, this it's evidence that we are under a great deal of stress, and when we are, it just makes you want to strike out at the people around you. When you put families on, the biggest cause of divorce in this country is financial stress. And when, for whatever reason, the husband loses his job, the wife loses her job, whatever, the other party, the other spouse begins, well, if you hadn't done such and such, then we could still have enough money. It is financial stress that precipitates divorces more than anything else. We see a kind of divorce taking place. We see evidence of a kind of divorce taking place, or at least being threatened, between the Republicans and Democrats. Not just where, the eternal battle of the sexes. This is a divorce. This is different. This isn't just, he said, she said. This is different. Or at least it might be different. And we'll watch and see how this... But it's one of those things that says, listen, we live in unstable times. Right? We've got problems with the monetary system. We might get nuked by North Korea. They can send over a bomb with a balloon, maybe. I don't know. Put a big balloon on the tie the bomb on the bottom of a big balloon and let the prevailing winds carry it from North Korea over to the North American continent and detonate it 50,000 feet or 100,000 feet or whatever they have to do. It's not the world I grew up in. There is instability around us. Where do you find anything other than an illusion of stability? I mean, when you stop to think about it, how secure are we? And to what extent is our security reasonable? Happy days really are here again, or are we walking right on the edge of a very serious problem? And it really looks like we're on the edge of that problem. And it might not happen. Might be able to skate by. We may be able to walk around this cliff and not fall off. But we are still in peril. We have not collapsed. Maybe we're never going to collapse. But we are in danger right now. And what do you do about that, Melody?
Prepare and plan. Get your financial house in order.
Yeah, that's some of the things that you have to do. Just from the perspective, it's like getting life insurance. It's like getting health insurance. It's like getting a bunch of things if you think you're going to need this stuff. And I'm not a super advocate of insurance. I think a certain amount of it is foolishness. I think it's sold for the maybe the wrong reasons, but nevertheless, it is a popular concept, and a lot of people would disagree. Where I wouldn't necessarily insure everything that I might. All right? Other people say, "Oh, we can't have too much insurance." I don't know. There's a line someplace. Where is it? Who knows? But nobody doubts that insurance is at least sometimes a wonderful idea, and sometimes you need it desperately. And it does look like not a bad idea to insure yourself. Do what you can to be insured. And what we're talking about, of course, is food, water, guns, bullets, gold, silver. You need a stockpile. That is a kind of insurance, all of it, against what may be a very difficult time. And we see evidence after evidence after evidence that we are doing the perils of Pauline here. And every week we get another one. Oh, my gosh, what about that? Oh, my gosh, what about the next? Oh, my gosh, we see one problem after another. And it's not all hype, as near as I know. Some of this is real. Maybe all. I don't think all of it's real. I think a lot of it's exaggerated. I get that. But just the same, the potential is there. We live in dangerous times. And it's incumbent on each of us to do what we can. If you believe that's true, if you believe we're in dangerous times, it's incumbent on each of us to do what we can to protect us, because it's unlikely that the government can or will do so. If Hurricane Katrina hits New Orleans, yeah, we can help them. But if an EMP, I understand they may be the antagonists in this situation. Some people think so. Conspiracy theory thinks that's a possibility. And you can't get straight answers. where who is going to tell you the truth on this matter? Who knows the truth? I don't know the truth. I'm speculating. All right? But people who do know the truth or should know, president, vice president, Congress, Senate, who is going to tell us the truth and who is going to hype it? I don't know, and I don't have an answer for that, and it leaves us blind. We don't have information that we can rely on. And that's not happening by accident. People are, oh my God, don't tell the idiot taxpayers. You know what they'll do? They'll panic. Truth, you can't handle the truth. Yeah, I think we can. I think that's an excuse that government uses that the public can't handle the truth. Tell them the truth. Let's do it. Let's deal with it. Just as if we were adults. Let's pretend we're adults. Let's deal with the truth.
Yeah, but Al, the truth is there. You don't need the government to tell you the truth. We tell the truth on this program. But I research for the truth. I don't listen to every Tom, Dick, and Harry that's out there writing opinions to figure out what's the truth is and what isn't the truth. And that's,
we're trying to and tell that's the truth. I get that. Some people are trying not to, and that's what I'm trying to listen. We're trying to get to it. Some people are trying to prevent anybody from discovering it, and it makes for an extraordinary world. We are out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's true.